Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to Setting the Record Straight. This is your host, Brenda K. Sanders. You know, I am back on the air. I decided that I wanted to make my own press statements, because so often we, the general public, the voters, and just people that are interested, that want to know, other media outlets other than maybe newspapers or local media, cover stories. And it's interesting that it's to me, extremely necessary that they be advised of the truth in situations, and especially where public figures are portrayed and written about in the media. I have a pretty thick skin, okay? I have a pretty thick skin. In fact, and today I will be commenting on an article from 2008 that when I Google my name in any kind of form, it comes up. And, I kind of listen to the advice, and I think now it's bad advice, of some people who I thought knew, that suggested that I ignore the article. Negative articles, and just go on about my day. But, I know I'm a public figure, and there is a higher burden of proof in terms of proving that you've been damaged, by false statements. But here in this article, let me tell you this, I found out that there is no weapon that will not be used against a person, right or wrong. You know, I look at what's happened to Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick, and, oh, my goodness, he did so much, he did this. But I am a person that I'm declaring in this broadcast, I've done nothing. I have totally adhered to my oath to maintain the laws, to maintain my integrity, to be accountable. But it's hard, difficult to digest my own situation, where charges are contrived, and in fact, willfully false, and called a liar at every turn, when I am not that kind of person. And so I've started this broadcast to kind of combat this mountain of negative information that's being released to the electorate there in the city of Detroit. And in fact, because it's on the internet nationwide. And so I believe that I should have stood up a long time ago, and I'm standing up now, because these are vicious attacks that are not based on anything but, political expediency, which is sad that our system is so corrupt that we are stooping, or not me, people are stooping to these new lows to remove a person from office. It's like, toppling a leader in their own voting jurisdiction. We see that across the seas, and we see that in other countries, but let me tell you, it happens within the United States, because I'm facing it myself. I believe in this instance where if you've been called anything near a mayor or even a candidate for mayor, you're more vulnerable to these kinds of attacks. And nothing is off limits. I mean, anytime someone comes in your house and takes your money out of your purse, how did they get your keys? Well, supposedly your keys were lost and then disappeared immediately when you tried to recover them. All kinds of tactics. I said maybe I should become a political consultant after enduring some of these experiences. The article that I wanted to address was the November 14, 2008 Detroit Free Press article. This was written by Joe Swickard and Zachary Gorchow. I finally sat down and looked at it, and I would like to address it. It says, and part of it says, Judge-elect Brenda Sanders faced heat for lies and forgery, I'm sorry. The lies part. Now, I don't know where I ever lied to anybody. Nothing at all that I'm aware of where I ever lied to anyone. That is a misstatement. And forgery. Now, forgery is when, you know, you sign someone's signature without the other party's permission. Let me tell you about this case, and I'll do it swiftly, but that is a lie as well. I represented a couple, and this is back from, actually, this all of this information is actually from 1998, and I believe in 2000 this order was entered by the Attorney Grievous Commission of the State of Michigan. And that is, I was a student. I just began ministry school and closing my practice down. And I was litigating a civil trial and actually prevailing. The woman who told me that I was, they thought, a very good trial attorney. They were looking for a person to take over a case that they had against GM, General Motors. It was an accident case where apparently some vehicle from General Motors, I don't remember, I don't recall specifically what the vehicle was, but it was about a couple was hit, I believe, in the back or maybe inside, and they had soft tissue injuries, husband and wife. And they indicated to me they had a case for some time, and that she, this attorney, I can't remember her name, it's in the records, was about to retire. She had another lawyer working with her as well. But they approached me that day when I prevailed on that civil case in court and asked me if I would be interested in the case. I said, well, I'm kind of locked in to, I'd already registered, I believe, for ministry school, paid my tuition. I said, well, how much money do you think you're going to recover? They said, oh, about $750,000. I'm thinking to myself, well, why are you giving the case to me? In any event, to litigate. Maybe a little gullible, but I said, well, I'll tell you what, I'll meet with you. Maybe I'm going to have to adjust my schedule at school. Maybe I can handle it. Well, I went to talk to my dean at my school, and they said, well, you're going to be going every day, 12 every day, and it's not going to be plausible or feasible for you to probably handle something like that. I knew what the magnitude of the matter was. They wanted me to handle a civil trial, civil jury trial for these two individuals. Well, I tentatively agreed when I talked to them the second time, signed an appearance that specifically indicated to this these two attorneys, I am not ready for you to enter my appearance until I have cleared all of the obstacles that I have in doing this case, including a possible opportunity to adjourn the trial until I was actually finished with that term of school, which would probably have been about 4 months later. I went on and tried to see what I could do to, you know, possibly accommodate this litigation. And in the interim, these two attorneys entered my appearance in the court as though I had approved the transaction that they wanted me to do. I asked them, well, just hold on to it in the event I am in school one day. I'll let you know completely. And they entered it without my permission and even without my knowledge. So I'm thinking, this is some kind of setup. I proceeded to file an emergency motion on a Friday evening, and everyone knows what I'm talking about. Maybe around 2 o'clock, I realized that this case was going to go to trial. And, in fact, I had a hearing, the Friday morning motion call, where the judge had indicated he was not going to, he was going to adjourn the trial, but he was going to assess a $10,000 bond for the couple to pay, you know, to cover costs, security costs, and so forth. Well, I didn't expect that. I thought full well that because I was starting a term of school, I was asking that it be adjourned until my semester break, and, of course, he denied it. I didn't expect the judge to impose a $10,000 bond requirement before we could proceed to trial. And so my clients, one unemployed, the wife, and my other client was employed with Northwest Airlines. I didn't know to do lie detector tests like I do now, but, you know, I didn't have the money at that time. But in any event, I guess they being surprised by the news of having to pay $10,000, which they did not have, you know, the female had a stroke and was hospitalized. I then felt it even more necessary to approach the court in an emergency mode and ask that the bond be set aside. I did. I did prepare a bond, knowing she was in the hospital, having very little time to get to the courthouse to file the motion. I approved this over her, with her, read it to her over the phone, and also her spouse. Now, I can't remember how it was that I talked to him, because I believe he was working, but they certainly knew about this motion. This motion was to set aside a bond of $10,000 being required in order for them to proceed to trial. It was an affidavit of indigency. And in that affidavit, it was two lines long that says, I do not have the money to file a $10,000 bond with the court. I am indigent. That's all it said. And I believe I, because she was in the hospital, signed her name. She had had a stroke and was sick. I should have, the only thing I admitted, and attorneys do it all the time, I should have added with consent. With consent. His situation, I believe he was at work. I should have added with consent. And I did not. Now, did I take any money from anybody? No. Did I ask for any money to handle their case? No. That was my plan, was to just incur the cost, and maybe, since they said it was a good case, you know, hopefully win or settle out and recover my money. I then proceeded to file that motion, and then asked my clients clearly to come to court to affirm the affidavit, to present testimony to the judge. It didn't make any sense to me not to. These are indigent individuals. They then could possibly convince the judge to change his mind, and that's what I did. Well, he didn't change his mind. He, in fact, said if the bond is not paid within 21 days, the case will be dismissed. I I did not get the chance to present testimony that day. The clients were waiting in the hallway, and because it was motion day, you know, full docket and so forth, the judge did not take testimony, as I believe it. He did not. Something happened where he did not want to hear the testimony. And so that was that. Now, the case was dismissed. I went on to school. I turned. And then, of course, get this filing where the clients indicated that I did not do a good job in their case. I did not proceed with trial. That they did not agree to the motion to set aside the $10,000 bond. Didn't have the money to hire someone to, you know, I didn't know what to do. There's no way. It was just my word against theirs. But I believe the circumstances of the case would infer that no one would deny a chance for their lawyer, free of charge, to set aside a motion, an order to pay $10,000. All right, that happened. No, so that's the circumstances when I addressed this article. When I ran for both judge and mayor, and that wasn't on purpose either, in 2008, this article surfaced. And this is the meat of the story. I copied pretty much all of the article. The second part of it says, suspended for forging her client's signature for David, then lying to a legal watchdog group that investigated her conduct. I don't know what a legal watchdog group that was, because I revealed that disciplinary action to every group that I interviewed. with. And there was no instance where I did not disclose it. After all, it's on the internet every day. And they check the internet. You're running for office. There would be no real reason to me why anyone would purposely lie or misrepresent such information. It's readily available. I never lied to anyone about the disciplinary conduct. I also want to say this, action. There were some other legal principles involved in this case, and I know that they were issued by the American Bar Association, that suggested to me prevail in the case. And I had to pull those rules, but there's no doubt I should have won the case. Of course, a three-person panel found otherwise. Well, there I am, stuck. But I did appeal it all the way to the Michigan Supreme Court, and they instead, I asked them to throw the case out, and I just asked for an admonishment, perhaps for my purposes to, just remind myself that when you're in a situation like that, even though it's an emergency, you ask for put with consent. All right, and so that was denied. So I have an emergency outside. Someone's out there, but I'm going to finish this broadcast. The Michigan Supreme Court denied my request to have that disciplinary action set aside and instead enforced the decision and suspended me for 50 days. The rest of this article, suspended for forging her client's signature on an affidavit, then lying to a legal watchdog group that investigated her conduct. Well, that didn't happen either. That's a deliberate false lie. It also says that Sanders answered no, not applicable, on a newspaper candidate questionnaire. In order, I guess they're suggesting that I try to cover it up. Well, that was later proven that I did not do that. In fact, that is the reason why I voluntarily offered to the Michigan Judicial Tenure Commission. I was investigated for that. I offered to the Michigan Judicial Tenure Commission voluntarily to take a polygraph exam. That was not true. I believe when I did the candidate questionnaire, I left it open, but I was going to go back and, insert. I think it was some boilerplate language that I had to insert into the question because it was not the only questionnaire that I was required to answer. And it was simply left open. I never submitted any. My memory was that it was left open. I polygraphed to that fact and a couple other questions and was successful. This was a polygraph examiner that we mutually agreed to. Believe me, I had no clue who it would get, but we mutually agreed to this polygraph examiner. And he found that conclusively, after submitting to this test, that I told the truth, that I, in fact, had not intentionally misled anyone. I left it blank. I was going to go back and get it, fill it in. Now, the last thing I want to deal with is this. Their allegations in the same article, you see it every time my name is Googled, and that is that I underrepresented my campaign expenditures. And this article was November 14th, 2008. We had not yet completed our reporting of our campaign expenses. In fact, I believe the final report was due on December 4th, 2008. With the Michigan Secretary of State. And I personally sent an email to this reporter and to the editor of the Detroit Free Press advising them that the reporting period was not over with and that we had until December 4th to report our total campaign expenses and do the amendments and so forth. This was just right after the election. The editor wrote me back and insisted that he was going to leave the article like it was it. He did not want to even. Oh, and additionally, the final reports were posted on the internet, and they had an opportunity to review and amend their article against me, and they did not. And so that is the kind of false representation that have been alleged against me, and they have not been addressed until now. And my part of my advocacy is for the media to be criminally responsible when you know there's information available that you can correct your reports or amend your reports and report to the public in order to report responsibly. And that is not done. And in fact, when the media has other information available, I believe they have the same accountability as judges or police or other public officials. The same bar that you're holding us to, they should honor. But somehow it always gets twisted. And I advise the public, you should not always believe what you see in the news. You should not believe all of it, all that you see, especially when it's negative. It's intentionally negative. And so that is my response to that article. And I plan to, in its season, address every article and the false representations listed therein. I thank you for listening to this broadcast. Of course, you got to know my little dog, Samson. Did not anticipate that he would have something to say during this broadcast. But nevertheless, I thank you for listening to the broadcast today. Please stay tuned because I'm going to be having other broadcasts to just advise the public of these things. I mean, they're coming up on the internet every day, everywhere. And so I think it is my duty not only to address them in this radio broadcast, but to counter these allegations by posting my own truthful data. All right, thank you again for listening, and see you next time.